Welcome to MCBI's 60 Mark, a podcast for curious thinkers.
And welcome back. It's Marina from MCBI, and I am here on a Friday, and I'm totally delighted to be introducing Josh Fanning from CityMag, who I was very privileged to be interviewed by a couple of weeks ago.
I think so. Yeah, it was about 2 weeks ago.
And we had the chance to have a bit of a chat, and I was incredibly inspired by some of the conversation we had as we walked back to the lift.
Always when you stop recording is when the best interview happens, basically. It's the role of journalism.
Yeah, it is. So here we are with Josh Fanning from CityMag as a journalist, and we're very lucky to have him here on the 60 Minute podcast series, giving his perspective on what's going on, not just in South Australia, but his perspective as someone who believes in the written word. So, Josh, how on earth did you get here on a Friday afternoon, rushing through that old elevator down here? Tell us about your story.
Well, I mean, I came here from an intense brainstorming session at Solstice HQ. So Solstice Media is a South Australian publisher. They publish in Daily, which is a daily newspaper sort of thing, but last year they bought my company, City Mag and Masthead Studio, as well as SA Life. So that brainstorming session was just, what's going on with the media? How do you make money in this day and age? Let's put the brains around the table and squeeze out all the juice. So I hope that it's going to make sense here after racing across town half an hour late. But yeah, I think basically I've just come from, you know, that world of media, which has changed. So I think I don't think it's overstating it to say it's dramatic, even since graduating. I graduated uni in 2005. And just, you know, that's kind of pre-Facebook and pre-Instagram, certainly. Instagram, to me, has been the bigger disruptor of the two, basically.
Yeah. It was really funny. When you and I were chatting, it was. I mean, I've been interviewed by a number of people, and I felt this incredible hybrid feeling as an interviewer,
right,
or an interviewee, if you want to call it.
Because I'm a bad interviewer. You should.
No, you're fantastic.
When I listen back to the tape, I'm like, shut up, Josh. What are you? Stop having a conversation. You're supposed to let the talent talk.
Oh, talent, darling, talent. No. But it struck me that you have a deep belief in the power of journalism and media. And certainly the conversation as we walked back to the lift was, no, people just need to listen more.
Yeah, I mean, it's a brave new world, Huxley might say. But I think we do need to listen to other people. But I just got taught a lesson recently by a reader of ours. And he's like, are you listening or are you hearing? And it was a bit of a whack sort of cliche, but
yeah.
I took on that on board, and even we did make some changes more purposefully around how we're writing and what we're writing about and who. And I think that discourse back and forward is important, but yeah, I think reading and reading deeply is probably a different thing to glancing at a story online or even our magazine. I mean, I've just finished a book last night that again has sort of changed my worldview, and I think books do that, you know, incredibly well. And I think journalism, perhaps, you know, people make a big deal about long form, but maybe the book is the ultimate
long
form. Yeah.
So what? All right. You know, what is long form?
What is long form? What does it mean? Do we want a definition?
Hey,
I think, well, long form is, I guess, what they're calling stories that are online that take ages to read. So we're probably talking 3,000 words plus. I would say 3,000 words isn't too long, but if you know, if you're on your phone, that is many, many scrolls of a screen. So I think our phones and the internet has changed what we mean by length. I think they've also sucked up a lot of time. So, you know, there is that saying, a picture tells 1,000 words or is worth 1,000 words. So I think people are downloading information. I think our brains are changing. I think, you know, we're becoming more impatient because we're getting into this information abundance age. And so all those things kind of combine to change, you know, physics, I guess, in terms of, yeah, I think really, you know, long form is probably a book. Yeah. Now it's not.
But it's funny. I mean, I always call it like junk food for the brain.
Okay, yeah. The internet stuff. Snackable media. That's a thing.
Oh, I like that. Snackable media.
Snackable media, yeah.
But, I mean, junk food's not good for us physically. But for us as... certainly, you know, in our world of transformation and leadership, we talk about being able to be a proper thinker.
Yes.
I don't know what proper means, but I do know that it actually involves more than just a scroll on it. But
I think proper thinking is about connecting ideas with outcomes and being able to see all the things through that. And if you're just diving in and out of information, you know, there's a difference between, information and knowledge and understanding even. All those things are
How is it
separated.
Different? There you go. I'll put it on
well,
spot.
I think information is just data and robots do that.
Yeah.
They do it better than us. You know, you've got people that lose to robots playing chess now and all those sort of changes. And as the more time we're spending on the internet, the more robots are learning from us, et cetera. But understanding, I think, fundamentally is an emotional reaction. And I think humans are emotional and we act out of emotion. You know, that's a thing, you know, because I'm not just a journalist, I'm a salesman as well.
So hustler.
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 As the publisher, you got to
I want to be a hustler. I'm moving into the world of actually, like, I'm going to be a hustler on LinkedIn.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that, that'd
like
be
hustling.
Interesting. Yeah, I think you got to, people respect the hustle, you know.
Yeah.
It's real.
It is real.
I think that emotion is where sort of understanding and information and knowledge all intersect, because I think if you've got a good understanding of the information around you, you're probably emotionally balanced. For that moment. Things can disrupt that, obviously. But there is, you know, I just finished reading a book by Martin Rees. Rees. He's Astronomer Royal. He is appointed by the Queen. He is a graduate of Trinity College. And he is a marvellous thinker.
Is that like a Hogwarts thing?
Like, pretty much. His
the
you know,
Queen?
The Queen.
I'm pretty sure there's more than one Queen in the world.
the Queen of our empire. Let's not ever forget that we are still part of the Commonwealth, because, you know, I think we tend to not remember that.
Trinity College. What?
That's where Newton, you know, discovered physics.
I think it's up at Paralowie, don't it?
That's true. I wonder if you're allowed to walk on the grass there or not.
I don't know. The grass might go backwards. Sorry. So what did you learn?
Oh, he was just talking about, you know, on the future of humanity, prospects for humanity in the future and our place in it. And he sort of talks about wet and dry technology. So wet technology being our brains, basically. And that it has a limit as a wet technology. And just the way he thought... But he had this amazing, it was a small book, a short book, and I would advise everyone to read it if you're interested in the future.
Because
he does talk, not pessimistically, but realistically, but also I think there was a strong sense of positivity and optimism as well about the future. He was saying that it is precarious, definitely, the environment, definitely a part of that, but the way he thought and the way his knowledge was understood through and then created his emotional response, I think, was a real inspiration to me and made, because I worry about the future a lot. I'm not even sure. I want to have kids, you know, like, what are they going to inherit? What is the world?
But don't you think everyone thinks that?
I don't think my parents thought that at all.
No, I don't either.
I think there was a very sweet generation born, you know, between 1940 and 50, 60, that, you know, had a really good opportunity where everything kind of made sense and capitalism made sense. And, you know, the book I just finished last night was incredible, called Dark Emu by Bruce Pascoe.
Right.
And he's an Aboriginal man, but essentially challenging the myth of hunter-gatherer and nomadic Aboriginality across Australia, and not just from his own perspective, but using the written word, using the words of our explorers. And one particular, and it's an incredibly sad book, not that it's written to be sad, but it's sad because it's a parallel universe. It's it's a schism in time where there's actually, and it's true, China had a level of expansion back in the 1400s, and there is sort of evidence with other cultures in Indonesia that they would bring high-ranking individuals from remote countries to China, to the Forbidden City, and talk and trade and share and treat them like very much like royalty. And there was, you know, suggestions that they were bringing Aboriginals from the north of the country.
Wow.
As far back as then. And so this all stopped because there was a huge firestorm in the Forbidden City, and he took that as an omen. The emperor then took it as an omen to stop. And so then we get colonized by Europeans and the Portuguese, and that Western mentality of using violence. And it's just a totally different way of looking at what could have happened. But, you know, Bruce does a great job to...
It's a dark emu.
Dark emu. You've got to read it to better appreciate what Australia is, what it was, what it could be. It's really exciting.
So you love, I can tell, like when we spoke last time, you know, that you love Australia and you love the written word and I love the passion, and we were standing in the hallway and you're like, and I love that. I was like, oh my God. But what is it about South Australia that you love and also frustrates you?
Yeah.
But you know, like when someone loves, when you love something that much, it's going to provoke feelings of frustration. So whatever you answer now is going to be within the context. I love you. I love you.
But we might shame you, pull your pants
but
up.
But I don't want to lie shake you because I love you.
South Australia is super interesting. I probably have more insights than most because I'm in the media and I'm on through digital in the back end of the media. You can see what people click on, what they're interested, what they're engaged in. I think it'd be remiss of me to not mention an Instagram account called Shit Adelaide.
Oh, we all know Shit Adelaide.
Surely, surely.
Oh my God. Love Shit Adelaide.
They came up in the brainstorming session I was just in, and, you know, they really have captured South Australia because we're kind of down on ourselves in this quintessentially and I think perhaps uniquely South Australian way. And I don't know where that comes from. I've got suspicions it has something to do with the Murdoch media.
Let's do that.
I do think it's a shame and it's self-perpetuating, but it's just an immature response. And I think we're very young from a Western sense. And basically, if we stepped back and started to, you know, people identify, they create their identities out of what they do.
Yeah.
And, you know, they chase careers around the world. And I've looked at that and I've done that to an extent, worked in Washington, D.C. and other places.
Was that like House of Cards?
It was not. I was making magazines for a hotel company. It was a very sweet gig.
My God, I like
eating
fashioned
and drinking.
My whole house. I'm based on House of Cards.
Well, it's a very classy, classy gig. But yeah, I think now that I look at South Australia, and there's a lot you can get out of it if you truly participate just in the geography of the place and the smell and the repetitive nature of what this place can be and how lucky you are to be here, and to focus on the positive people around you. There's some amazing South Australians. And so, yeah, I think this place is great, and it's just undiscovered entirely and unexploited, I think, you know, in terms of the world and what we've got here. And you're seeing people like, you know, Sanjeev Gupta and GFG Alliance coming here and investing. He's not a dumb man. Like, he's a very clever man and a very successful industrialist. So he's here because renewable energy is a thing, and he's invested in a SA company, which was founded by a man who's from a family who was on the Buffalo, who came out here first. And so there is this culture here. I think it's just many people are quite lazy and they probably don't read enough or expand their horizons and maybe get in a bubble. And so that perpetuates their, oh, sad little Adelaide, when really Adelaide is you know, a mindset, really. Yeah, yeah. It doesn't exist. Like, it's all in your head.
It is. It's a, I heard one of my friends describe us as this luxurious provincial town with enormous amounts of education, but grossly unsophisticated. And I went, I'm sort of happy with that, though.
Yeah. I'm
from Adelaide. I'm happy with being grossly unsophisticated. But I think that does go to the heart of the defiance that in some ways defines the Australian culture.
Mm.
We're defiant.
Yes.
You know, we love it. So with that, I am terribly interested in your opinion on the power of the written word, which is, it dragged me in. I mean, is the written word dying, or is it just, you know, are we waiting for the big comeback? So intelligentsia are coming back, creatives are cool again, and the dumbass, you know.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, there's lots to unpack there. The written word, I think, has never been stronger than it is now. There's probably more words written per millisecond than any other time in history. They're just published in what feels like probably a more temporary way. They're in tweets, you know, they're in comments under Instagram posts. We are communicating just too much. Let's just quickly,
it's
much.
It's quantity, isn't
it? Yeah, it's a quantity, and there's an urge, and I think there's an emotion attached to it. There's an emotion of needing to be seen, of validation, of not building a personal character. And this is probably, you know, more where we're talking about is that long form, the place where you spend time alone in your brain. And I think most people listening to this podcast would be able to sort of think, you know, just when I read a book or even a newspaper versus my phone, my brain makes different shapes. That's how I sort of picture it. When I'm on my phone, it's like spiky. My brain is just like prickling and electric, and I'm like, am I doing the right thing? I'm spending too long. I'm getting sucked in. I need to be over there. I need to do this. Oh, there's more. Whereas when you read, you get in this beautiful lull and you go down a path and pictures start to form because you're not, you know, looking at pictures on a screen as well as words. You are just using your brain in a more three-dimensional way and a more nourishing way. So after you've read a book, A, you get a sense of satisfaction that the internet will just never give you, because there's only ever more. I mean, you can't finish the internet.
No, that is so true.
And so I think removing even that small sense of satisfaction and being always on our devices, always on, ever forwards, it's not human. And that's sort of what Martin Rees, the astronomer royal guy, was talking about, is there is that post-human future because that's evolution. So it's an interesting, huge concept, but you've got to read it in a book. I don't think you can.
No, you can't digest something as big as the risk of adaptation.
No. And you can't share it. There's this compulsion that we've always got to be doing things together. We've got to be sharing. We've got to be, no, you need to be, sort yourself out, you know. See, that's the thing. Gandhi probably wrote it. He also said
sort yourself out.
Yeah, sort yourself out. Don't make your problems someone else's problems. So he's got an English accent.
You just put on an English accent.
Well, you know, India was part of the Commonwealth. They got out. Australia hasn't.
Right now.
India has gotten out.
I love that. Gandhi captured into sort yourself out.
Yeah.
All right. The very last thing, just interested in the real risk to the world. And one of the things that you and I spoke was the passion that came through you when you talk about climate change.
Oh.
I mean, climate change is big, but it is like it's at risk of being weaponized as a way to, you know, get the cattle to follow a voting stream or what have you. But it is actually real. It's like, but a lot of it is we're made vulnerable because we're just not reading and we're not understanding and we're not even trusting what we're seeing in front of our eyes. What do you think is the risk to not reading in the world?
Oh, the risk to not reading. I mean, that's, I can't even begin to really give that a sufficient answer, but I think if we're not reading and also criticizing, I think that's probably as important as reading. You can read whatever, but the idea of remaining critical, remaining objective, and backing things up with other sources, it's almost a full-time job. I think time is the big thing that's been removed, and time and reading are best friends. You need to have it in order. And it's kind of fallen into that luxury as well. So probably a reimagining around how to treat yourself. I think a lot of people are probably working too hard, and so treats are coming in the form of Uber Eats and, you know, looking after yourself in, you know, financial transaction sort of ways rather than a deep sort of spiritual and intellectual nourishment. So the risk of not reading is that you'll lose yourself. I think if you don't spend time with yourself and in your own head reading what other people say and then asking yourself, do I agree, do I disagree, then you are just going to fall into the, you know, the trap and the bubbles of social media, of the internet, of other people, and you will be influenced. And you might not fully appreciate it, but you probably won't like that, and you'll probably feel insecure, and you'll probably feel like you don't know what's going on, but maybe you won't be able to articulate that even to yourself, and so you'll lash out in other ways. And I see
congested.
That.
Congested.
Yeah. Yeah, and so it'll start to project and manifest weirdly. And I think that all just comes down from you not spending enough time with yourself. And that could be even just walking alone, taking that time out. So I think reading's a good one. It's productive, but you could also just have time out. You know, they do it for little kids when they get a bit revved up. You know, do you need some time by yourself?
We do it at work. We put people on the naughty step. No, we don't. Sort of.
But yeah, I think, I mean, the risk is we're not going to read, you know, how many pages was the UN report about, you know, 1,000 species gone. We're not going to read that, but hopefully we read The Guardian and maybe some other newspapers as well that can help us appreciate it all.
It's all gone, Pad. So that's it. That's our time together.
Okay, great.
Can you believe that?
Yeah,
I
easy.
I love that.
Quick.
Time and reading is our best friends, and this is our time as we say goodbye to each other,
okay.
Josh.
It's time to say goodbye.
I've got to say, I have been so looking forward to this interview.
Oh, good. I hope it lived up to the looking forward to-ness.
Yeah. No, thank you so much for spending a part of your Friday with us on the 60 Milk series. I think a lot of people are going to take a lot about reading and also, I guess, some of the insight about South Australia. We are a defiant, humble, completely odd group of people. And it's lovely for someone like yourself who observes us so regularly to be able to give some insight. But before you go, I'm going to do a couple of questions.
Right.
Quick ones. All
quick
right.
Quick ones. Quick fire.
Just real quick. Not even five. We do four.
I said fire.
Oh, I think it's
quick fire.
I don't listen because I don't read. No, I do read. Did you read the book I sent?
Oh, not yet.
Not yet. Okay. All right. Banana milkshakes. Yes or no?
Yes.
Oh.
Sure. I like lime milkshakes, so.
No, lime milkshakes are completely okay. Banana?
What? You think what?
That's
no.
That's crazy.
No,
that's...
most people go lime milkshakes are crazy.
Okay, favourite public holiday?
Oh, Easter?
Easter.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Jesus. He's just there.
He came back. Did he come back?
He was gone and then he came back. Who's done that?
Okay. Favourite footy team?
I don't have one.
Really?
I mean, Port Adelaide, maybe.
Of course. That is the best team.
The Power. Yeah.
The Power, yay.
I saw Scott Hodgins. Is that his name? Hodge? Back in the old Magpies day down at Amy Stadium. And he kicked a goal after the siren.
Scotty Hodges.
That's it. Hodgins.
Hodgins.
I said Hodges. I was there with my football mad family-in-law and, well, not family-in-law, cousins. And that was pretty cool. So I was like, yeah, I support that.
All right. And last one, if you weren't doing this, what would you be doing instead of sitting you down here?
I'd be emailing people frantically. There's 1,000 of them that are unanswered because I've been in meetings all day.
Let's get a bot and like sort out your email for you. Thank you so much, Sean. Josh. Josh, I called you Josh.
Yeah, that's my name.
Thank you so much for coming here today on the MCBI 60 Milk series.
Cheers. Thanks for having me.
See you again.
Thanks for listening in today. We look forward to you joining us next time.